You're listening to the Anfield Wrap. My name's Adam Smith, and this is AFQ Football, sponsored by the European Super League. The European Super League for all your footballing needs. And on this week's super panel, on the to answer your European Super League questions, we've got Johnny Milburn, Siobhan Began, George Trad, Paula Murphy, Sean O'Donnell, and Lizzie Doyle. And unsurprisingly, loads of the questions are about the Super League. And a few of them are quite fun, to be honest. We can take them with the spirit in which they're intended. And we're going to start with Ray Moran, who's asked, if the Shankly statue gets moved, where would you move it to? So if you were to move the Shankly statue, where would you like it moved to? Okay. And we'll start with Sean.
Ibiza. So either on the rocks at Cafe Mambo or on a dance floor in Amnesia. We just think it'd be boss to see Bill Shankly when you're on the dance floor and just turn around, he's just there and he's always there. So
he's got his hands in the air, hasn't he? So yeah. Staff the dance floor.
Like he just doesn't care.
He'll be slut dropped more in his entire life.
That's exactly the sort of answer I wanted. Paula Murphy, where are you slut dropping the statue?
Do you know what? I had a sort of semi-sensible answer. Well, semi-sensible as in my first thought was somewhere on the pyramid, like right in the front of everywhere, dead obvious. And then I sort of had a little think, wouldn't it be funny if they put it outside Wooderson? But, you know, the bitters would do it some damage. So I'm not really sure. I can't decide whether it should be somewhere ridiculously stupid. I don't know. Or somewhere good like the Pierhead. I don't know.
Fair. Yeah, that's good. Johnny, two internet connections, Milburn. Where would you look to look to put the Shankly statue?
There's some nice bars in town it would do nice. I think one in particular on Maryland Street just opened. It's got lots of nice outdoor space, nicely pedestrianised. could definitely stick it there.
Yeah, that's a better shot than I'd be for Johnny. I like that one.
Okay, Siobhan.
Lots of people are really making me change my mind here, because I was originally just going to say the Dovedale Towers, but then I was going to change my mind to Benidorm. Now I just don't want it to go anywhere. We'll talk serious talk in a minute, but just to, you know, be pure heart and soul about this, like, that is the last thing anyone needs, is less of a reminder of why we're all here. So,
yeah, I think that's very true. Lizzie?
I was just going to be dead bored and see my back garden. But then Sean's come out with Ibiza, and I just feel like, what an ode. Do you know what I mean? The only other one I like the Pierhead shout. And you know the way that the Blues try and claim the Liver buildings? Well, if we put Shankly on top. Next to the Liver beds, then, and he's like on top of the Liver building, like, giving it one of them as if to say, like, it's mine. That'd be the only other place, really. So you can just, like, look up and, you know, give them a little wave or whatever.
I mean, I love that your first thought was my back garden. Talk about looking after yourself there, Lizzie.
Someone's bought a patio heater.
It broke, actually, my patio heater.
George?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'd happily pay for it to be shipped over to Boston and put on the pavement outside John Henry's house, so he's got to look at it every morning. And then maybe if, you know, as Bill's arms are up aloft, we can put a big elastic band between the two hands, and just might happen to be an unlimited supply of watermelons there that we could use, you know, as a catapult and just, you know, send some free fruit his way. You know, I'm sure he's got a window cleaner, but I wouldn't want to make his life too difficult because he's only a window cleaner. But yeah, I'd like John to have a reminder of what he's supposed to be the custodian of, because that's why we're all here. So he needs to think about that too.
Yeah. Okay. Some good answers. Probably Ibiza takes the biscuit, if we're all honest. But let's have a look at what. So Gareth Cullen wants to know, if you could add one new rule for the Super Bowl Money League, what would it be? Mine would be, if a player is sent off, then his wife or husband has to start the next three matches for his team. So a player gets sent off, and for the next three matches, they're banned, but their partner gets to play in the team instead of them. So any random rule that you can think of that you think would be quite good fun, who's looking at me like they've got an answer? Let's go with Siobhan.
It's not that fun, but I just to, you know, if you're going to fuck shit up, you might as well really fuck it up. I think they should introduce a rule where you swap positions in the table with whoever you've just beaten. So that at any given time, it's absolutely irrelevant how well you're playing or where you sit currently, and it all comes down to the last game, but you don't know who, because you don't know who's going to be top, because it depends on the previous game. I'd like to introduce that rule just generally, to be honest.
let's just do it anyway. To be honest, that was quite a good answer. That was better than I was expecting that to be, to be honest.
I don't know whether to take that as a compliment or a bad mistake.
6-1. okay, let's go to Sean.
So mine would be, if you won the league, you got relegated. So just a complete counter of what they're bringing in now, in terms of there's no relegation, no promotion. Let's just flip it completely on its head. And if you win the league, you get relegated into the league that's not there.
I'd love to see the own goals being scored left, right and centre as the league reaches its climax. Let's have a George.
Obviously penalty shootouts replaced with musical chairs. to add to the farce. Why not? Come on. Be all right, wouldn't it? And you can do it to the, I don't know, the Champions League music.
The Champions League music. That's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah. Okay, Paula.
Right, I'm gonna go daft here because my head's been chocker. I am gonna say that if you win a game, and in the course of winning that game, you get a dodgy VAR decision going your way, then next week you have to perform a cheerleading dance to bring on the opposition team onto the pitch.
So you win, but because it was via VAR, you've got to welcome them on.
Yeah, you've got to welcome them on, but it's got to be full on. Like, if we're going to go American BS, then let's wholeheartedly go and let's do the cheerleading. Give me an A, give me a B, pom-poms the lot, and you've got, and not a troop. It's actually your team has got to stand and welcome them on. And whoever scores the dodgy goal has got to think of the music and has got to think of the choreography. And they've got to choreograph the other team coming onto the pitch.
Makes me want to watch it.
I'm not gonna lie to you, Paula. I didn't listen to the second half of that because I was trying to figure out if you were welcoming on Aberystwyth FC with your "Give me an A, give me a B." I was like, who the hell else is it that you spelled out the name of there, Lizzie?
So I reckon to win the game, you know, when you have injury time. So however much injury time's added on, the whistle goes right, and then I'm thinking like Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory golden ticket. Loads of balls enter the pitch and you've got to find the winning ball. And if you don't kick it in the back of the net, you don't win the game, like a golden ball situation. But just make it chaos. Put shit loads of balls onto the pitch. I'm banging to the idea of like the musical chairs with the music and stuff like that from George. So I'd probably do like Benny Hill at the same time and just see where we go from there. Yeah, just throw a load of balls on the pitch and let them figure out which one's the right one. Like when your aim used to get the cereal packets and used to want like the little prize that was in it, a bit like that.
Okay, Mr. Milburn.
I feel like I've had a Gary in me brew. Just over the last 3 minutes. That was insane. My request is relatively simple, really. If you think about, like, there's been all this, as part of it, they're saying that youngsters haven't got the attention span for a 90-minute match, and neither have I, to be brutally honest with you. I think 90 minutes is a bit of a slog. So I think we should change the game into, at the very least, 3/3, if not 4/4. And also, to make that work, I'd like the half-time, or what would be quarter or third time, to be extended. It's a nightmare getting a bevy at half-time anyway. So why wouldn't you have, like, half an hour, half an hour. So you basically have 2 half-an-hour half-times and 3 half-an-hour thirds of the game. And for the people who go to the match, half-times are one of the best bits, really. So, and you could between the first half time and the second half time, you could pre-order your bevvies for the second half time and you'd just be waiting, prepay, pre-wait, and they'd be waiting for when you came out. So TV would still get the same length of event. People have short attention span, and people who are maybe, I don't know, I try and watch Netflix with my wife, and she can't watch one screen at a time. She has to be on two screens at any one time to cater for all that. It's a semi-serious point that I think would improve almost every constituent's life, to be able to get more adverts on the telly and all that crap, wouldn't they? So I think everyone's a winner, to be brutally honest. And we get like four times as much half-time lift chat as we get at the moment, so...
How is that Super League consultancy job going, John? Is it going all right? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there are no losers. Club gets more revenue over the bar as well. Four times as much revenue over the bar as they'd normally get.
This is just like your drink and habits, Johnny. Don't digest it over anyone else.
It's a solid proposal based on what everyone's been moaning about.
Yeah, but that's why the blues. What's that? That's why the footy thing they play in January, that's why it takes about 4 hours and it's only like a 1 hour game because of all the 5 minute adverts every 2 minutes. It's terrible.
I reckon we'll do two more Super League based questions. And as anyone who listens to this show on the regular will know, one of my habits is to pick a question and then realise that the person who's asked it has got a name that I can't pronounce.
Yes, here we go.
But the good news is we've got Siobhan with us.
I'm going to send it to her right now.
Lizzie's going to send...
Imagine if I can't pronounce it.
It's an Irish name.
Irish.
It's either Irish...
Oh, I can't read that. Paul.
It's Irish.
Paul Murray.
But Paul,
you've got about nine more letters after Murray.
Yeah,
but
we can't anglicise it. We're just going to call them Paul.
Yeah,
Paul O'Mareidhaig is to be. what it is. With every week I issue an apology about my pronunciation.
What about Sean? Sean's got an Irish surname.
That's true enough.
Yeah, another bus is going to be on fire in Belfast tonight, based on something. Adam slaughtering the bloody
listen,
the eight, the English.
It's all Siobhan's fault because she can't pronounce it, and she's got four
I
more.
I thought you were going to say Oshin or Kiever or something like that, and No,
but you've got the Scrabble approach to names, so I just thought that you'd be able to figure it out, chuck a few extra letters in. No bother. Anyway, I'll ask the question. I'll apologise for the pronunciation of everybody on the call, and then I'll ask the question anyway. So now, this question's actually quite an interesting one. So he or she has asked, has the backlash highlighted just how much our opinions are shaped by agenda-driven media? And what do we do as supporters to combat the propaganda coming from the likes of Sky, BT, etc.? Now, I find that question quite interesting because the suggestion seems to be that we actually were all not as against the Super League as we think we are. We've just been told that we're against it by Sky, unless I've kind of misunderstood it. But it's an interesting question of how the extent to which we all get influenced by, what we read and listen to. I mean, God, look at politics for how much newspapers and things can have an influence over people. But, do we feel like our reaction has been tainted a little bit by what is happening on Sky and BT and things in reaction to it? George?
Big question, this. I mean, since 2016, I've basically... The approach I've taken with my life is I get all my opinions off the sides of buses now. So that really just drives how I behave and my political leanings as well. So yeah, that's a wonderful way to approach life. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think the advantage that the likes of Sky have got is they've got people who are emotionally invested and people who are in the game, and they can come out with a quick reaction to complex issues, and then that kind of sets the tone for how things come about. And as I've had time to digest this proposal and my gut feeling was a feeling of betrayal and emptiness, and I don't really think that's passed. And it certainly it sat with me really in a really strange way when I sat and watched the Reds last night, because I couldn't get excited either way when we scored or when we conceded. And I guess until I mean, that's probably largely to do with the potential for whether that match actually meant anything last night. But I don't know. We'll see, won't we? But I do wonder where if the genie is completely out the bottle now, it's not going back in, and I wonder where we can go with it. But yeah, well, we can't help but have our opinions coloured by what we see and what we read, and you know, whether that's through social media or normal media. But it's a difficult one, and all we can do is digest and I guess see where those opinions sit with our own personal experiences and go from there. It's tough.
It is. Paula, I found it really interesting. So, for example, last night, I didn't listen to the Sky commentary. I had the hot mic on, which I regularly do. And Neil was really up for the game because it was Leeds and he fucking hates them. So he was really keen for us to beat them. And I was quite engaged with the match because I was listening to the hot mic. And then people I know afterwards were sort of saying, you know, I just felt dead hollow. It just felt, I just wasn't into it. Didn't mean anything to me. How much do you think that kind of thing influences the way you feel after a football match?
It's I've thought a lot about this, because one thing I did take a good long think about the other day was, I remember being an adult before the Premier League was formed. So I can remember this sort of mind shift happening in the early 90s. And I was trying to remember, what was my reaction then? And obviously media was very, very different then. And I still remember being angry. I still remember being, you know, and I can remember talking to people like my dad, and my dad was going, oh, it's all about money. It's all about money. And it does feel like that again now. But I think for me, I tried to, I mean, I was watching the game, but I remember feeling very, very uninvested. And we don't get Sky, we get BeIN. It's because, you know, I don't live in England. Mm. So I make a habit of never, ever listening to Andy Gray and Richard Keys, because I can't bear them. I literally cannot bear them. And it really worried me that on our WhatsApp group, loads of people were going, oh my God, have you heard Keezy? He's actually going mad. He's really in support. I think the thing about this and media is it's putting together very strange bedfellows. And it seems like there's a sort of a shift, a paradigm shift, because people are very uncomfortable that Gary Neville has said a few things that they're really happy with, and that's not sitting easily with them. Or there's Man United fans who feel very comfortable with the way Jamie Carragher's talking, as a very basic example. And I think there's a lot more filtering of this to do. I'm trying to keep my media down to local stuff because, you know, since Brexit and all the rest of it, I do feel very strongly that media, if it's directed in the right way, influences people. And so I you know, there's this thing about, well, maybe Sky are only kicking off because they're worried they're not getting as big a piece of the pie. And there's that layer to the problem as well. But it does feel like that it's a sort of civil war for who gets the biggest piece of the pie. And it does feel like that the people who enjoy the pie most, i.e. us, are sort of largely being told to wait at the back, and there might be a few crumbs at the end. That may or may not turn out to be the case. But yeah, so I'm trying to avoid mainstream media at the moment because I want to see how I feel. I want to see how my opinions percolate talking to people that I care about and people whose opinions I respect. So I am trying to stay local, and I'm even talking to loads of Evertonians, because it's interesting because they're not affected how they feel about it as well. So yeah, that's my point at the moment.
I think it's very fair. And Johnny, part of my problem that I've had in all of this, and I completely get that the problem that is right in front of us, the clear and present danger, is the Super League. And I get that. And we almost have to come together, beat that. But let's not forget what this has sort of shown us behind the curtains about. Do you know what I mean? And I think I've got such a problem. Like, I read what Pep Guardiola said today, and I thought, yeah, that's great. I agree with everything you've said there. But you're talking about the, you know, sort of defending what football is supposed to be, and it's not right if you're right at the top. But you're speaking about it as somebody who knowingly signed up to work for a country who's sports washing their country via football, and can spend 150 million in the summer on Haaland without even it bothering you about it. So it rings false to me when all these people are saying these things. What's your kind of take on how you've reacted to what you're, you know, are you reacting to what you're hearing, or are you kind of avoiding the mainstream media anyway?
Well, like Paul, I can remember the formation of the Premier League, and I think slightly different from Paul. I think if you think back to those days, where did you get your information from? You got it from your parents, you might get it from the local radio, you might get it from the news, you might get it from the Echo. And so the sources of information back then, you might argue that it was a less cynical time in terms of the agenda. What we've got in the mainstream, like press, written media, is there's been so much of them have bought each other that actually there's an illusion of choice. So basically, all of the major titles are owned by billionaires, conglomerates. And so you're not really getting a choice. You're getting a heavy agenda thrown at you. But we've now got the ability to contact hundreds of people that we might know directly or indirectly through social media, through online forums, through all the other channels. So right now, if I just relied on what Gary Neville told me, or just relied on what Jamie Carragher told me, or what my dad told me, or what the Daily Mirror had said, then I'd have a certain viewpoint. But I think you're able to draw from WhatsApp groups you're part of, online forums you might be part of, things you see on social media, and you're able to grab and select and curate lots of relevant information. I think what I don't like is the sort of the faux outrage and the sort of almost the hypocrisy of some of the people who are projecting themselves as being completely without sin. And I think you're referring to that a little bit. So you've mentioned Manchester City there. And again, I've heard a lot of people celebrating what the Everton board have put out today in criticism. And I can't argue with their criticism, but none of these organisations are without. They're hardly the like most virtuous socialist model of football. Everton are not St. Paul, are they, in terms of they've got a shadow owner who's putting money into the club through sponsorship deals and shady dealings like that in order for them to go out and buy the next player that they couldn't afford through the legitimate income into the game. There's all different degrees within and none of these organisations are charities. I mean, it's all about spin. Gary Neville, lovely fella, great pundit, but he's financially doping a team from the non-league to try and get them into the Premier League. So he's not without his own baggage that he brings to this. We've all got our baggage, and if we acknowledge that baggage and have an open conversation, then that's absolutely fine. But when people are trying to project themselves as being saints and saviours of the sport, then it just doesn't wash with me. And I just think I think it's disgusting what the club have done. The charitable side of me wants to think that because clubs like Manchester United are owned by public entities, the timing of the announcement had to be done the way it was done. And I think we all might feel a little bit different with a little bit of time, in that I think had they made a, we're thinking about this could be happening, this could be happening, this could be happening, bit of back and forth, bit of consultation, talk to fans groups, talk to whoever, and then in 6 months' time, it's announced for the season after. There's a chance people feel slightly differently about it, but I think what they've done is whatever it was, midnight on Sunday, was it? Just dump, this is happening, live with it. I think the handling of that has been awful. And the idea that we now spend future football seasons where There's no threat of relegation. There's no real prize for winning the league other than winning the trophy itself. The league loses from it in terms of sport and integrity and endeavour. And I Sean will remember this. In under Rafa, I think we pulled out in the group stage. We had PSV three times, or I think we had them three times in four seasons, and everyone was going, fucking hell, we've got to go to PSV Eindhoven again. That I'm bored into that. And that was because part of the enterprise is getting to go and visit different places. It's not about just playing Real Madrid every season, but playing Juventus every season. It's about the fact it comes along once or twice a decade that makes it the event, and it makes it a big ticket event. If we know we've got to play Real Madrid and Barcelona twice a season, it ceases to be the event that we all want it to be. And I think they've judged it so badly. And a final point on it. Sorry, I know I'm on a bit of a hobby. I also think people are really, really happy to conflate Liverpool fans, players, manager, club with a vehicle that owns the football club. Yeah, you know from seeing those interviews last night, the players knew nothing about it. Jürgen Klopp knew nothing about it. Even Pep Guardiola knew nothing about it until a couple of hours before it was announced. This has been foisted upon them, and the people who should be the target of our ire are the owners of the football club. They're the people exhibiting the greed, and I just think we've got to make sure that fans attacking other fans doesn't help. We've just got to make sure that we're organised and we go after the right targets. And I think Jürgen last night was worrying that the players might be affected, or the players might be targeted or seen as or felt unsupported by this. And I hope that's not the case. But the one thing that we can do as fans is withdraw our support. And that's the one bit of power that we've got. We can't force anything to happen in the boardroom. But what we've proven time and time again is when we organise and we do the right thing in the right place, we have pushed them back on so many things over the years. And in FSG's defence, they've been happy to put it into a reverse gear, which not many big organisations will be prepared to do. And I just think we've got to try and get ourselves into a situation where we're organised and we leverage that power, because the power should be used against the boardroom, not against the players. And I'll stop talking now because I've been talking for about 20 minutes.
No, it was good. I enjoyed it. Siobhan, you're a woman who knows her own mind. How much do you find what you listen to and what you read influences, you know, your opinion on things?
Well, I can't speak for many people on this, because there are many that the media influences, including people who are really close to me who I really wish it didn't. You know, we've got views that are a certain direction that I'm not on board with, but I know exactly where they've got them from, and I can't blame them for doing so. I don't mind where I consume my media, because I've got a really good bullshit filter for it, so I'm absolutely fine with that. For me, you know, putting aside all of the shit that this is, you know, kind of how awful it is, how terrible, there wasn't even a minute of consultation, all the stuff that everyone knows, I can't believe we've now got something else that polarises people in the way that so many issues before this do, and it quite clearly is now. Absolutely. What we've got now is people who feel like they have to be in one camp about this, whereas I personally feel like it's okay to call out the faux outrage of all the paywalls and Sky and, you know, all the conglomerates that are, you know, gasping, clutching their pearls about how terrible this is, that it's all about the money and it's not about the community anymore, when they have fed that agenda for how long. It's all right to be fuming about the fact that it's happening and be disgusted at your own club. It's also all right to agree with pundits despite thinking they're also hypocrites. It's all right to do all those things at once. And I think that people are rightfully, because it's coming at you thick and fast, isn't it? And, you know, you... social media has created this like urge to fight every battle, and you just don't need to. You can just switch it off and ignore people. It's created something else for people to row about, and there's God knows there's already enough of that. So I'm personally fine with it, but I fear for people who are And I'm not calling myself, you know, too intelligent for that kind of media. It's just something that, you know, I know better than to trust. And, you know, I can totally understand how easy it is to trust in what you read and to feel like, oh, because so-and-so said it, you've got to believe it, or I can't choose that and that, I've got to just choose one of them. It's so sad, you know, taking away from all the stuff about the club and how, you know, it's eroded anyone's kind of love for it and all that, all the obvious stuff. You know, people, Everton made a statement today, which they're more than entitled to make, and we agreed with every single word of it. And you can guarantee that every opposition fan commenting on it also agrees with it, but are just fuming because Everton have waded in. Like, you know, it's just got to stop. It's got to, it doesn't help, does it? So, yeah, it's just, I'm personally fine with it, but I worry for the mess that it leaves everyone else in.
Sean, I think Siobhan there has hinted at the control and the power, if you like, that certain media outlets have. And I say this as somebody whose mum voted Brexit because she reads the Daily Mail and always reads the Daily Mail. And I've told her it is Nazi propaganda and turning into a racist, but she still believes everything she reads in there, and there's not a lot you can do about it, is there? And it's just become a bit of a problem in modern society, hasn't it, that where people get their sources from is having a massive influence over the way they're thinking about things.
Absolutely, and that's why, you know, all these big politicians, you know, you don't have to look at America, where they've got different TV channels for different political parties, and that's just how things work. It is the most powerful source of influencing people, and, you know, social media has become one of the most powerful sources to influence people. And, you know, there's a lot more behind that than what you think in terms of, like, your news feed, and you think what you're seeing is just, like, the normal thing, and it's not. There's well more behind what goes into that. I think the difference with this is, you know, yes, there's a lot of hypocrisy going on. You know, yes, there's a lot of people who are getting on the high horse who shouldn't really be getting on the high horse about it. But the one thing that everyone is in agreement on is that it's the wrong thing to do. So it's not as if you've got one side of the fence where everyone's going, oh, the Super League's brilliant, and people can read one paper and go, oh, yeah, the Super League, great. And there's another paper saying the Super League's the wrong thing to do. It's a load of rubbish. It's the bad thing. Everyone's on the same page. And even, you know, Carragher and Neville, you can say what you want about them, but they're football purists, and you can see when they talk, they're talking from a football purist point of view. They're not talking from I'm employed by Sky and I might not have a job, because they don't need a job in 2, 3, 4 years, whatever it may be. They're sorted. They're talking about it from the heart and from a footballer point of view. So I think that, yes, the media controls the world, and it has done for however long, and it will continue to do so. But with this, it's just such a wrong move and such the wrong thing to do that, you know, you've got everyone who's just pulling the same direction saying, look, this is the wrong thing to do, and that's the be all and end all of it for me.
Lizzie, I mean I agree exactly with what Siobhan was saying and what everyone said, really. But I think where I've just got a bit of a problem is, you know, for example, you know, Sean said there, oh, they're football purists, Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher. And you know, to an extent, I agree. But last season, Gary Neville was saying quite seriously that the season should be null and voided because of what was going on, and because Liverpool were going to win the title. And this season, when Liverpool were nowhere near winning the title, but the death toll was higher than it was when we were going to win the title, he's not saying anything, he's popping champagne corks. He's, as Johnny points out, he's financially doping a football club. So I've just got a bit of an issue with, yeah, okay, everyone's against the Super League, but the whole thing's rotten, isn't it? Don't we need to use this as the catalyst to say, this has got to change? FIFA can't give 32,000 seats in a 68,000-seater stadium to fans. You need to give more than that. And we all need to maybe just look at the sources we're getting our information from and say, are they telling me the truth about this? Am I learning what I need to learn, or am I being sold a puck?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of sensible people on this call, but I think there's a lot of people out there who'll just take something at face value. So anyone who maybe watches Sky and BT and just takes it for what it is, doesn't do their own research, balances their own arguments, I'm not that person, but there are people out there. But as someone who has worked in the media, I hate saying that, but like, as someone who has worked in the media industry, like, I have a much better, not better understanding, like, I know it all, sorry, it's not the right word I'm trying to look for. Basically, I feel like I've got a more broader understanding of, because I understand why these telly channels, news channels do what they do because I understand how it works and that they need to sell subscriptions and that they need to make it look like a product that you want to buy. Honest to God, it's basically, it's all, that's a business too. So the more that like everyone understands the reasoning behind them, the less you'll really take what they're saying at face value. But what I will say is I really agree with Siobhan on like, so a lot of what you said, I agree with you, Adam, but I do think like there's so much whataboutery going on at the minute and it's doing me head in. Like, you are right on Gary Neville and what you've said about them and stuff like that. But let's all be honest, including ourselves on this call, we've all been complicit in football getting to this point. We've all done it. We've all paid tickets that are far too much money. We've all paid for our Sky subscriptions. We've all paid for our BT. You know, we've let them bring in Amazon football. We have all played our part. And I think that's the hardest thing to come to, that is one of the hardest things to come to terms with, is that this feels like a step too far, but nobody has done enough to stop things getting to this point already. We've let money drip through the game and yeah, we've tried to fight certain things. Liverpool fans have done great with some things, but like, let's not all act like angels about this. And that's not me saying anything to do with it's all our fault. Not at all. Like, we know for a fact this shouldn't be happening, but there's just so many facets to it. And again, just agreeing with the sentiment that you can disagree with someone on one thing but agree with them on another. You don't have to take sides. You don't have to take camps. Like, if the majority of people think it's wrong, then those people need to come together, all the powerful sources, to make this, like, not happen.
My feeling, Lizzie, on that is that I think we've been used in a way, and that's how I feel. And I feel like they don't care. No, but if you think about what we've been... As a fan base, and let's just talk about Liverpool or the Premier League, if you want. As a fan base, we've been marketed on the back of what we offer. So we, you know, you look at when Liverpool or when Sky shows, you know, obviously before games were played behind closed doors, when they show the fans, they show people singing, they show the cop in full blaze, full of colour, and that's been used to market Liverpool or the Premier League all around the world. And you know that throughout this consultation process that they've done in a clandestine way, that someone will have calculated, okay, if we have fans not going to the game, if there's strikes, if people pick it in, if how much is that going to cost us, and let's offset that about against how much we can earn in Malaysia, in Thailand, in China, in India, because I might not pay my 50 quid to go and watch Liverpool every week, but I guarantee you they can find 100 people who pay a pound to watch it, so they're up on the game overall. And that's what really doesn't sit well with me. I feel like this product that we have been a part of over the years, and that, you know, all this marketing of this means more and you'll never walk alone, and all of this stuff that's been built to been combined to build a Liverpool brand, we've been used and thrown away, and I'm really sick. I'm sick to the stomach because of it.
Can I lighten the mood?
Go on, mate.
Just seen a great tweet.
Does this Bill need editing out, Johnny?
Almost certainly not.
Okay.
Bill Shankly would have loved Lee Butler playing heavy tunes in the Shankly while they sell you £25 bottles of gin for 250 quid.
Oh dear.
That's the socializing we believed in, I think.
I think everyone's made some really good points that I enjoyed that as a discussion. I think I totally get I'm sick of the whataboutery, I'm sick of all that. I think what this whole thing's done for me is just make me realise just how much hypocrisy is around football all the time. And it's not whataboutery, I think, to say, well, Gary Neville, you've got your finger in a pie, Jamie Carragher. Yeah, I mean, he said it, to be fair, Carragher, on Monday Night Football last night. He said, when Hicks and Gillette were here and the club was going to go bust, he didn't say anything. So there's just people getting on moral high horses over this. And I think the thing is that the Super League, the idea they've put forward for the Super League is awful. I mean, it's awful. It's ridiculous. The idea of no relegation, all of that stuff is a nonsense. But there's a grain of truth in the fact that UEFA need to be taken to task a little bit, because the changes they're trying to make to the Champions League is awful. What they've done with tickets in previous finals is a joke. There is an extent to which something does need to be done. And I think that's where I've got to. It's like the straw that broke the camel's back for me, where I've kind of gone, I've let that go. Like you were saying, Lizzie, we've let stuff slide.
Yes.
But it's got to the point now where I'm kind of like, I don't want to let this stuff slide anymore. I'm sick of it. I'm sick to the back teeth of all of you hypocrites having a say in football. And Sky, by the way, have still refused to say whether or not they bid for the rights to broadcast the Super League if it became a thing. So, you know, they're doing all of what they're doing at the moment, but they won't say they wouldn't do it. Managers won't say they wouldn't manage in it, or commentators won't comment on it, or referees won't referee in it. It's just ridiculous. And it's got, I think this is for a lot of people, the straw that broke the camel's back, as I say, where you just kind of go, I'm just done with this now. I'm done with all of the hypocrisy, and it just makes me sick to the back teeth of everything. But anyway, let's move on to something a little bit lighter. I'll do three more questions. One of them is lightening the mood. It's the final one of the Super League questions that we've got. And it's from Kerry O'Connell, who said, FSG have decided to move the Liverpool franchise to another city. Which non-British city would you move us to? Sean, you going back to Ibiza or?
Yeah, go on, we'll go play Don Bossa. That'll do.
Sorted. Party time. But the Shankly statue can be where we all think it belongs. Paula?
So, a bit of a vested interest. Option number one would be Cairo, because obviously we're all over the Mo thing. But option number two, I think if we're going to go down the, you know, similar ilk, similar city, I'd like to see us in Detroit.
Okay, nice. That was a bit of a wild card one. I wasn't expecting, to be honest. George, you always come to these shows dressed as an air traffic controller. Where would you be flying to go to Anfield?
Well, without breaching my contractual air traffic control duties, I'd probably say somewhere like New York, because it's just the coolest place anyone's ever been. They need a decent football team. I'm not into this Red Bull nonsense. But New York would be an absolutely awesome place to go and watch the Reds. And I'm sure we could have a cracking time around there, because there's already a massive supporters club as well. I'd be well into that, even though the winters are a little bit harsh.
True. Lizzie, Anfield in the middle of Central Park, or are you thinking about?
Oh, yeah.
Gordon.
Boring. One of the best cities in the world. Boring.
That was the second line.
Do you know what? I haven't. So Siobhan's going to probably answer this for me. But I was thinking practically and fun of somewhere in Ireland. But because I've not been an island hopper, I'm more than happy to then throw this to Siobhan to tell me what the right answer is for the city. But I love the Irish. I just think it's close to us. Like, you know, you're probably, it's dead easy to get a ferry or a plane. And it only takes like 40 minutes to go there. Obviously, I'm a producer and thinking in like logical terms, but also thinking about the fact that we'll have loads of fun over there. And I can't be bothered with Dublin.
No.
I really can't be bothered with Dublin. So just somewhere fun and nice in Ireland is my answer, which Siobhan can now answer for me as well as her answer.
As the official correspondent of the Republic of Ireland. Now, if you're going to, well, the two answers are, of course, Cork or Galway.
Cork.
Yeah. One of the two, Cork or Galway, West Coast, down south, down very south. You know, lovely people, lovely places to go, lovely little day trips around it, you know, a nice drinking culture, loads of, you know, places to drink. But I think we're just missing. Why aren't we making this practically as sound as possible, going where the people are just like us, and going somewhere where, you know, the... Glasgow?
freezing. No British cities.
Oh, British cities? I thought it said English cities.
No British cities. Glasgow's out.
Bilbao. It might not be a city, but it's got I really love, so my favourite experience of going anywhere in Europe was seeing at like midnight, and I shit you not, at like midnight in Bilbao in the square. Loads of parents sat around the square just drinking, all that. No kid assigned to any parents, just about a million kids in the middle just playing football. And I thought, they deserve it, you know. I know they've got their own stuff going on there, but
be well into that. Pinchos and a pint at half time.
Pinchos and a pint. What's the wine that you pour from a distance? What's it called? Oh, it's gone.
With the whalebone thing. They do that in Heron as well.
It's like red wine and Coke or something that they drink there.
Paula, no more.
That does not sound nice.
It is. It really is.
Let me be clear. Red wine and Coke does not sound nice. thanks to our Irish correspondents who can't pronounce Irish names. Johnny Milburn.
Oh, come on. No. There's a difference between Irish, Anglicised Irish names and Gaelic names.
Adam, I missed the premise. So why are we moving the ground?
Just because of the European Super League, isn't it? So, it's just do what you want.
So we're going to be franchised off basically somewhere else.
Basically, yeah. Basically, that's the idea.
There's a boss town in Spain called Segovia, and it's a UNESCO heritage place, beautiful city. They specialize in the local dish is like suckling pig, and like it's the nicest meat dish I think I've ever had in my life. Boss wine, boss beer, and decent climate, and it'd be away from all of like the, I don't know, if you're in Madrid, it'd be grim, wouldn't it? Because of you'd be surrounded by Real Madrid fans and all that. Segovia, as far as I'm aware, don't have their own team, but they've got like the most Michelin star restaurants in Spain, apparently. So it's a proper eaters gaff as well. So Segovia would be my answer, but why would we? Is the other thing I would say.
And it was me thinking the Avengers destroyed that city. Go on, George. What are you saying?
I'm just saying they've got a belt at aqueduct.
Yeah. Big old aqueduct, yeah.
Yeah, it's a great place.
Right, two more questions. We'll make them quite quick. So Rob Hurst says, who in the current squad is best equipped to transition into another sport and what would it be? So I want you to give me an answer of who in the current squad you reckon could most easily transition into a different sport and what that sport would be. Does anybody look particularly confident? Let's start with Paula.
Right, so, I'm going to do this based on the fact of how long they'll play this sport before they pick up an injury. So I won't be using any of our back four, you might be pleased to say. The one who would best transition to another sport would be undoubtedly Milner, because he's got a sports brain. When I'm as a PE teacher, I zoom in on kids like him because I can see he's got a sports brain and anything you give him, he'll be able to do. I'd love to see him play volleyball, but he's the wrong shape. He's not even a backcourt player. He's not a basketballer, and I don't want to play golf because when I rule the world, that's the first thing I'm going to ban. Sorry. But I think James Milner would be someone that could like pick up a badminton racket and give it a good go, or pick up a squash racket or a tennis racket and sort of fairly okay, give it a really good go without getting injured.
I feel like a lot happened in that answer, Paula, I'll be honest with you. Lizzie, what sport are you banning just randomly in the middle of an answer?
Golf. I don't mind some of the golf. I can't go like a serious answer like Paul, and I was just trying to think of what would be mad. So I'm going for Shaqiri playing rugby. Now I don't know which type of rugby, because I'm not into rugby, and that is what I definitely would ban. Can't bear it.
League, 100%.
All right, that one I'll take your way, Paula. But let's stick him in the rugby league though, because that's the more like northern one, isn't it?
Oh yeah,
that's not like the southern.
Also called the Super League. Just sorry, called the Super League.
Oh, would you look at that? So I'd stick him in because he's small and he's hench, and I just think like he'd go flying through everyone, like, and he's just a pain in the ass, isn't he? I just think, him in rugby league, if not tag rugby.
As if you said you were going funny and didn't do Shaq in basketball. What are we even in this for?
Well, you've got to be practical at the same time. I'd just love to see him just like darting amongst all like big, massive men.
Fair. Johnny Milburn.
Milner's a good answer, actually. I think Milner is the most versatile. My understanding is Milner was and is a very, very decent cricketer. And if he'd not had a career in football, he said he would have chosen that. And I've seen him on some video in Melwood where he's got them playing cricket with him, and it's a boring James Milner answer, but it's probably the one I can most immediately think of. I do quite think I hear of seeing Shaq doing something daft, I don't know, like Thai boxing or something. That'd be quite funny against some massive 7-foot Russian or something. That'd be hilarious. But yeah, James Milner playing cricket's probably the answer I can think of.
George, you look like a man who could turn your hand to any sport. What are you getting the squad to do?
Well, I was just thinking about Lizzie's answer on rugby, and she chose rugby league, and rugby league is Wool and rugby union's Tory, so I don't really know which way to go. I did play a little bit of rugby for about a year and a half, and then realised it just hurts loads, so I wasn't really into that after that. But as far as players are concerned, I'd love to see Nat Phillips take up professional boxing, because he would not be able to get knocked out. Mike Tyson could one bomb him in the FOD for 20 minutes and he wouldn't even feel it. So yeah, Nat Phillips, world champion heavyweight boxing, he absolutely slapped the granny out of Anthony Joshua as well. So yeah, 100% Nat Phillips heavyweight boxing.
Siobhan?
I mean, Shaqiri is quite clearly a wrestler that hasn't realised he's a wrestler, and he's absolutely snapped a lot of them. They can just tell. Like, I can't think of anything more. See, I was trying to, like, obviously Virgil van Dijk is obviously just such an athlete that he'd be like, you know, one of those annoying kids in school who's really fucking good at everything and you just hate them for no reason.
I love them kids.
But they're nice kids as well, and they're good at everything. As someone who was good at fuck all as a kid, like, you know, those kids, I liked them, but I was like, God, I hate you. I bet you he's one of them. But I can't see past Shaqiri in like a nylon, like, you know, low-cut vest and stuff. And I don't mean like wrestling now. I mean wrestling maybe in the late 70s, early 80s.
Like Greco-Roman, just sort of...
Rolling
around.
I wasn't born in the late 70s or early 80s.
Big Daddy.
That was still a thing, actually, Siobhan. So you've made a fool of yourself there.
Sean. I didn't get the reference. That's what I mean.
Sean, what, who are you getting to do what?
I think the obvious is just Van Dijk at anything in it. Yeah, I mean, it's harder to think of a sport that he couldn't play and be the best at, to be honest. But one weird one that came into my head was Fabinho playing ice hockey. I feel like that's how he plays football, like Inspector Gadget style, just like, like a weird stick. But yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
Before we leave this, Alan Hansen did actually play volleyball for Scotland.
Did he?
As an under 16, yeah.
He was a pro golfer as well, apparently.
Yeah.
He was that good.
Did he have any sand in Scotland? Oh, no, it's not beach volleyball. All right, carry on. Playing in Aberdeen on the beach. A big coat.
Freeze.
Right, we've got one more question, and I really like this. Jay Watterson wants to know, what's the hardest thing Nat could break with his head?
Oh, wow.
So what do you think is the hardest thing that Nat Phillips could break with his head? Johnny?
Times crossword. I don't know. To loop back on what George said earlier, a big fuck off watermelon that's been fired at him by an elastic band through Bill Shankly's outstretched arms, probably outside John Henry's house.
Yeah, right through Henry's living room window.
There you go. That's what you call Shankly a callback.
Yeah, that's what comedians call a callback. Shankly with the cross, Phillips with the header into John Henry's kite.
Nice. Okay, Sean.
I don't know. Chelsea and West Ham Hearts on the last day when he bullets one in top end, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Paula, you got anything?
No, I don't know really. No. Can't think. Sorry, can't think.
Lizzie?
So it'd be uncomfortable, but going with the watermelon theme. So, like, I just filmed in the office John, Craig and Josh doing this thing for charity called Pass the Pineapple, and I asked one of them to kick it and they all shit out, and now I realise why, because it's so heavy and it's spiky. But John did kick it lightly, but I'm thinking I'm going to up it from a watermelon to a pineapple, because you're dealing with weight, but you're also dealing with spikes. Not that I want to hurt Nat, I'd never want to hurt him, but I think he could handle it. It's a compliment.
Fair.
I can't believe it, Bill Shankly. I can't believe when you said that then they realised it was spiky. I can't believe they didn't realise that before they started playing.
Have you met the Anfield Rapture one?
Yes.
Siobhan, what's the hardest thing
you've ever seen? It's first in the game's head, and it's... have we got any Father Ted fans in the house?
100%.
So the episode where the nun, Sister Assumptep, replaces his bed with bricks, dumped into his bed, and it's just a load of bricks. That was, I don't know why. Someone got me a very special Father Ted gift over the weekend, Lizzie Doyle. I'll go and get it in a set. Oh, no, it's in the wash. It was a Mundial t-shirt with Father Ted on it as the representative of the Republic of Ireland, but the representative for Italy was Father Romeo Sensini from the over 70s.
Yeah, over 75.
I should know that, being the Liverpool Father Ted quiz champion twice running.
Whoa, where's this Father Ted quiz?
Oh, I'll tell you afterwards.
I need to be in this.
You don't need to be in it because I've won twice on the bounce. Pretend as the rest of them, honestly. yeah, that was the first thing that came to my mind because I'm not very imaginative.
So a brick bed.
A brick bed, yeah.
Nice. Okay, George?
You know, after having conquered the world of boxing, you know, I guess he'd go into, after beefed up a bit, Big Natter go into strongman events then. So I can imagine him, world's strongest man, lifting up the Atlas stones above his head and just nutting them in half, one by one, in a show of strength that would send ripples around the world of strongmanning, if that's even a word.
He sends his message out. He is the strong man. very good. Okay, well, that'll do, I think, for this week. So my thanks to my guests, John Milburn, George Trad, Paula Murphy, Sean O'Donnell, Lizzie Doyle, for both being on the show and producing, and of course, Siobhan Bagani. I've been Adam Smith. You've been listening to the Anfield Rap, and that was AFQ Football.